some of the books that these middle graders and stuff get to like read and the effort that's being put into these stories, I'm like, man, y'all are getting quality.
Hey readers, I'm Anne Bogle, and this is What Should I Read Next? Episode 328. Welcome to the show that's dedicated to answering the question that plagues every reader. What should I read next? We don't get bossy on the show. What we will do here is give you the information you need to choose your next read. Every week, we'll talk all things books and reading and do a little literary matchmaking with one guest. Readers, if you enjoy listening to the show each week or reading our blog posts over at Modern Mrs. Darcy, you will love our weekly newsletter. Inspired by our show, each week I share three things I love, one thing I don't, and what I'm reading now. Although sometimes, let's be honest, given the state of the world lately, I've been focusing on things bringing readers joy and perhaps skipped over the bummer sort of news some weeks. If you are already on the list, next month our 2022 Summer Reading Guide will land right there in your inbox, ready to inspire your summer reading adventures. If you think you're on the list, but you're not sure, make sure to check your promotions folder or other filters so our emails land in your main inbox. If you don't yet get those emails, this is the perfect time to sign up because you're not going to want to miss that summer reading guide. This year's edition is a delightfully curated compendium of suggestions and guidance for what you might love to read this summer. From shiny new releases to paperback favorites, you'll feel zero guilt about taking to the beach, the pool, or even just the bathtub. Sign up at whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/newsletter to get all the book news, behind the scenes peeks, and more, including the 2022 Summer Reading Guide when it drops. I can't wait to share it with you.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan. But nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Readers, today's guest firmly believes that reading is a lifestyle. And she's created a bookstore experience and reading community that fulfills this motto. Abigail Glenn grew up in Southwest Philadelphia and had a life-changing reading experience as a young adult that set her on her current path. Today, she lives in Charlotte, North Carolina, where she owns the online and pop-up bookstore, Shelves. I loved hearing about Abby's journey to opening a bookstore, how she made this dream come true, and why it doesn't look exactly how she once thought it might. If you've ever dreamed of opening a bookshop yourself or wonder what it might be like to do so, you'll hear so many fascinating details in today's conversation. Abby and I chat about the book that changed her life, The Riches of the Middle Grade Genre in 2022, and what it takes for a book to find its way to the right reader. Abby also shares three tantalizing recommendations for titles she can't help recommending to every reader right now. I had so much fun talking with Abby. I think you will be delighted by our conversation as well. Let's get to it.
Abigail, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. I'm so excited. Now, you know that one of our big values here at What Should I Read Next HQ is bookish delight and enthusiasm, and that reading isn't just something you do as part of your life, but that it permeates your entire life. You run Shelves Bookstore, and at Shelves, you have the motto, reading is a lifestyle, and you refer to yourself as Charlotte's friendly neighborhood bookseller. I'm so excited to talk to you today about all the details of how you started your business and what it's like to recommend books to your community face-to-face in ways that are sometimes unconventional.
Yes, I'm excited as well. And yes, I do call myself Charlotte's friendly neighborhood bookseller, and it has stuck.
Before we get into the details, tell me this. Have you always been a reader?
Always been a reader for as long as I can remember. You know, I grew up in Southwest Philadelphia, and I distinctly remember us having this cabinet on our indoor front porch area, like the foyer area where we had all these books. And a lot of the books at that time were books that were full of multiple stories, multiple children's story rhymes. And I feel like when by the time I came into the picture, I'm this her second child, they were already there because we also were a home that had a full encyclopedia set. So, and I know people probably don't even know what an encyclopedia is.
But I'm old enough to know.
Those were always there. And we definitely utilize our local library a lot, too. So I've always just been someone that enjoyed books. I don't know if it just simply was like being drawn to the browsing experience, because I do still to this day enjoy browsing the library. Even as a bookseller, it's very hard for me to walk into a library and not just want to browse. Like, I know the library offers so many services, you know, you can use their computers, you could so many things, but like, it's very hard for me not to walk the aisles and browse and look at the books and the experience of it. I've always enjoyed the experience getting a new book, even if it's something I have to return later.
I'd love to hear a few more books on your shelf from when you were young. What nurtured your love of reading back then?
When I was innocent in mind and spirit, I enjoyed Roald Dahl. He's the author of Matilda and James and the Giant Peach. I also read, who is that? Barristan Bears had a couple of chapter books, not a lot because they were mostly picture books, but they did come out with a couple of chapter books. So that was in my, honestly, my early middle grade years. And in the eighth grade, I read this book called Fly Girl. I don't remember how I came across Fly Girl, but I read it and I remember it changed my life because it was the first book that I saw myself and the girls in my neighborhood in. People talk about representation. That at the time, you know, I wouldn't have used the term representation, not because I didn't know what it mean. It's just not the word that folks were using to describe seeing themselves in a book, at least not that I knew of. And Fly Girl by Omar Tyree was it. It was based in Philly. And so it really did speak to the experiences of growing up as a, you know, young Black woman in the inner city. Like, you know, and Philly really does not have an outer city. Philly is Philly. But to this day, like Fly Girl, I always tell people that was the thing that kept me reading, because it's not that I would have strayed away from reading, but I've been a reading buddy before for the local library here. And I do tell people that what a child reads in middle school will determine a lot of times if they end up continuing to read into high school, because middle grade is such a transitionary period for kids. It's like that pre-adolescence, but they're still very much a young child. And so I used to encourage parents, like, you should really let your child read what they want to read. That's obviously age appropriate, but if it's a graphic novel, let it be a graphic novel, because by you trying to dictate what you think they should read, I said you could really deter a child from the beauty of reading, because reading is supposed to be an experience that everyone can enjoy. So by you telling a child or a person that, you know, a book can only be a book if it's formatted this way and if it has chapters that start from one, you don't mean any harm, but you could be doing some harm.
I appreciate those words for our listeners. And I'm so glad you weren't deterred from your love of reading at that stage.
No, I was not.
After you read Fly Girl, how did that influence your expectations of what a book could be?
We call it, you know, in the Black community, a hood classic. It's amazing. It was too grown for me at eighth grade, but baby, that just opened the door. Oh, after that, I was reading all type of, they deemed it urban fiction at the time. There really wasn't a young adult genre that we knew of. So honestly, you were kind of stuck. I'm glad that that was my turning point for sticking to reading, because it really just helped me wrap my head around the experience of adolescence. There was a point in my adulthood where I remember looking up the statistics in Philly as far as just like, you know, the different groups of people there, ethnic groups, race, minorities. And the reason why I did this is because growing up, you know, I didn't have an experience where I was the only. That experience happened for me in college, being the only Black student in the room. In Philly, that was never the case. I always went to schools where Black kids were the majority. Reading books like Fly Girl and a lot of the books that, you know, I read as a result of the Black Expression subscription that I signed up for actually gave me a greater appreciation for storytelling by, you know, Black authors and what our experiences are, no matter where we are in the country or in the world. Had I continued to read books that never spoke to my experience as a Black child and then later Black woman, I actually think that would have harmed my viewpoint than helped it, because then I wouldn't be able to say to my customer, like, I know how important it is to see yourself on the page. Again, at the time, I didn't make such a big deal out of it because I wasn't necessarily looking for myself on the page. I didn't know that's what I needed to look for. I stumbled upon Fly Girl. Again, I forget how, but I stumbled upon it. And then it wasn't until I became an adult. And again, I started reading all kinds of stuff. I said, well, man, I'm really glad that, you know, the thing that kept me reading was a book about, you know, a young Black girl in Philly. And then all the books after that were about other Black women and men growing up in inner cities and or places that were predominantly Black, because it really helped me understand the importance. Now, when you hear marginalized groups say, wow, you know, I've never read a book and saw myself on the page, because I know what it's like to see myself on the page being 13, I'll be like, oh, yeah, oh, that is important. Like, I probably wouldn't be able to say that as a bookseller, like, without, you know, it more so being a political thing. Like, that's the right thing to say. No, I know what that truly means. That actually had a big impact on my decision to continue being a reader. My reading palette has changed. I like reading, you know, a lot of different things and getting exposure. But I will always know that my decision to be on even the path that I'm on came out of the fact that at that turning point years, I picked up something that happened to be filled. The pages were filled with a Black girl that looked like me. And I didn't realize the impact that would have until now. Here I am at 33. Like, I just feel like it's so much good stuff out there. We didn't have all of this when I was growing up. Some of the books that these middle graders and stuff get to like read and the effort that's being put into these stories, I'm like, man, y'all are getting quality. And I'm thankful that I had a mom who from a very young age always gave me a choice to go to the library, a choice to participate in a book fair and pick what I wanted up. My mom was just very happy to see me reading.
As hard as it is to look around and go like, where was this when I was growing up? There's also something that feels really good about that too, especially I imagine in your line of work.
Yes. When it comes to the young adults and stuff like that, I do tell parents, like, let that child pick out their book. Please do. Let them pick out their book.
I chuckled at what you wrote to us about how you were a member of a book club in high school. Not a book club, a book subscription.
Yes. When we were growing up, we got, my mom got Jet magazine, and I loved Jet. Jet was this small Black publication, little small magazine. It looks like a mass market paperback book, that kind of small, but just a little bit bigger. At some point over the course of my young life of perusing these magazines, I came across an insert about a monthly book subscription called Black Expressions. Now, I have no idea if Black Expressions was limited to one magazine publication or if it was just a service that was advertised in various Black magazines. Either way, I was impressed and I filled it out. I was raised by a single mother. My father was in the picture. He just wasn't present all the time. And so he would support us financially when he remembered to. And we would save that money. That's how I had like a little bank account. And I believe that is how I was paying for it. Books used to come for me and doing like a book swap with my girlfriends at school every month. And it was such a great experience.
I love the mental image of young Abigail just checking the mailbox going, is today the day? Is my book here? Is my book here? So it's clear that you're talking to people all the time who really value reading and want to do it for themselves as a lifestyle, but also like to pass that on to the next generation in their lives and in their neighborhoods, which is so wonderful. And I imagine that all you've been saying about reading right now and what it means and the place it can and should have in our lives permeates the way that you choose books that others read because you chose them, which is, you know, a privilege, I imagine, and a big responsibility. So let's fast forward a little bit to the present day when you own and operate an online and pop-up bookstore called Shelves. I'm sure we could talk all day about this question. I'd love to hear how this business came to be.
Pre-coming to Charlotte, so I've been living in Charlotte for 6 years. I moved down here in March of 2016 in a little rental car. I used to work in HR. I was an HR business partner. I had always said to myself that I wanted to open a bookstore. That would always be in the back of my mind. However, I chose to prioritize paying off debt instead because I said, if I do the bookstore or do any big life event, you know, in the future, being debt free would be a big, big, big springboard for me instead of having to, you know, figure out how to juggle, you know, managing a small business and, you know, paying back student loans because technically Shelves is my second small business. And I had a little small business called Mustard Seed Career Professionals where I would help people with their resume writing and all that stuff. And it was a good way to, you know, just test the waters of running a small business at a very, very, very low small scale, figuring out like if I had what it takes to kind of, you know, maintain customer relationships and do good work. The something that was always in the back of my mind was always getting out of debt still. Like I was already on my debt-free journey. I said to myself, like, girl, when you do a bookstore, what you know you want to do, like, make sure you do it once you finish this debt journey because all you're going to do is be thinking about like, oh, you know, I made $500. How much of that can I put towards the student loan? So, and I didn't want to do that. So I've always wanted to start the bookstore. The subscription was the first thing I also wanted to do was like, it'd be so cool to do a book subscription. Yeah, like I had that in mind, but I was so focused on getting out of debt. Even when I looked into getting a website done, the company I reached out to about designing a website, and I was like, how much can I get with $500? They were like, not much. So I was like, yeah, girl, just stick with your plan of getting out of debt first before you start any of like any more business stuff.
Well, it sounds like because of that personal and practical goal, you had a lot of time to nurture and really refine your dream of opening this bookstore.
Exactly. So when I got here to Charlotte, I got another HR job. You know, I got to do exactly what I wanted to do in terms of focusing on employee engagement and communication. I still would daydream about opening a bookstore and the subscription, all this stuff. I would daydream about it. I would sit at the job and I'd be working and I'd daydream. Oh, once I get out of debt, like I should really like stick with this thing. So in 2018, I decided to attend a free small business workshop hosted by Mecklenburg County here in North Carolina about owning a small business and doing business with the county. And it was a great session at the local community college here. I told myself that I was going to launch Shelves. I think it was in 2020. I think I said that. I was like, I'll be out of debt by then. And I'm going to bank. I'm going to save my money. I'm going to be stacking my money. And I'm going to be able to get me a building, all this stuff. So I kept the name Shelves close to my heart. I didn't tell anybody. I wrote it down in my journal. And a year later, I paid off my last debt. And I start talking to one of my girlfriends here about like, girl, I want to open a bookstore. I want to open a bookstore eventually and all this stuff. So she said to me, how come you can't start that now? Like you could, why can't you do like a pop-up somewhere? And I was like, really? She said, yeah, like you talking about doing book fairs and, you know, all this. And she said, you don't have to kind of wait. You could kind of like start messing around with that stuff now. And I just ran with that. And I started looking for more small business workshops. And I found this small business workshop at the local library. Shout out to, again, Charlotte Mecklenburg Library System. And I'm the only person that attends. So you have these two business owners in front of me. It was an all-day session and I got undivided attention from two people. They brought in current business owners in Charlotte to sit down with me and to listen to my business idea and to give me advice on things to consider.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know. And so now I feel like, okay, now I know where to buy books at. I have my LLC paperwork that came in by mid-May. all of these things I'm doing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, who's going to let me come into their space of business and sell books? So then I just start reaching out to random coffee shops. And I remember one of my former coworkers says, you know, there's a coffee shop around the corner called Queen City Grounds. You should check out them and see if they'd be willing to have you. Just check them out. They're really nice around there. So I met with one of the owners and we set the date. The first pop-up I had was on June 22nd, 2019 at Queen City Grounds in Uptown Charlotte. When I went to set up, I had, I think it was 60 books total. I was so nervous that my friend, the one who recommended me to do the pop-up, she came out and she helped me set up. And I said, I need you to buy a book right now so I can make sure I even know how to check people out. That's how we got started. And it felt so natural. When I was there, it felt natural to talk to people and let people choose their books. I'm that type of bookseller. I don't hover. I tell you like, hey, these are like the different things we have to offer. If I see that you are not readily picking books up off the shelf, that's when I come back over and say, like, just tell me what you like to read and I can point you in the right direction. Mm-hmm. It was a journey and I can't believe like June of this year will make it 3 years. And we've since obviously now evolved into not just pop-ups, but online, and not just an online store, but we have a monthly book subscription, and not just a monthly book subscription, but we carry our own line of merch, and our merch is really good and it's popular.
Your merch is so great.
Yeah, I'm like,
it's so great. I'm glad to hear readers are finding it. Readers, we'll put links to all this in show notes. Abby, I would be so delighted to walk through the doors of a local coffee shop and discover that there's a pop-up bookstore. Oh, that would make me so happy. But now, how can Charlotte area readers and visiting readers, how can they know where to find you? Because Bookish Surprise is a wonderful thing, but I know that we want to seek you out.
First of all, we have an events page on our website, and our events page always has our pop-ups listed. And then we always include that information in our newsletter, which goes out once a week. We always post on social media that we're having a pop-up, and we tag the place that we're going to be at. Most of our pop-ups are at our partner site, Enderley Coffee Company in the West Charlotte area. And it's been working. People, you know, come, they show up, they shop, they have a good time. It's fun. We meet a lot of new customers. We also meet most of our online supporters. So,
Great.
Yeah, that's a great thing too with the pop-up. They're like, I'm such and such. And I'm like, oh yeah, I just shipped the order.
Oh, that's so fun. I'm going to be in the Carolinas this spring. So hoping I can come see you in person.
Nice.
That is wonderful that you don't need to be local to Charlotte or the Carolinas to be a part of Shelves Bookstore, yes, because you do have this large online presence.
Yes. The subscription is also proof of that, because we have subscription members as far west as California, as far south as Florida, and as far north as New Jersey.
I feel like that's a challenge, listeners. Abby, you went from a kid waiting to get her book subscription in the mail to an adult who sends out book subscriptions to readers all over the US. And I know you put a ton of effort into choosing great books for your subscribers. Can you give us a taste of what kind of books you really love? Maybe ones you've really enjoyed recently. And if they really landed with your reading as a lifestyle subscribers as well, well, that would be fun to hear.
One of the books that our members really unanimously loved is Kai Harris's debut novel, What the Fireflies Knew. We had the pleasure of having Kai Harris come and speak to our members about her book. And we were having an entire little joke about, like, do we call them fireflies or do you call them lightning bugs? Because I grew up calling them lightning bugs. And she said, so did she. But for the sake of the title of the book, they called it fireflies. But the book really was written from the perspective of a young girl. She was 11, 10 or 11 in the book. The author managed to really write from the mindset of a child. Folks said it put them back into the mindset of what it was as a child and the way you think as a child. So yes, What the Fireflies Knew by Kai Harris.
Okay, Abby, you made that sound fantastic. Give us another one, please.
Another really good book, and I remember I'm cracking up because everybody was describing it in the same way. is called The Fortune Men. So that's historical fiction based on a racial incident. I think it's in Wales, where the Somalian man, who happens to be Black, was accused of attacking a Jewish woman. Again, he's an immigrant in the country he's in. It really shines light on some racial disparities that are happening, that happens in other countries, because we always hear America, America, America. But again, America isn't the only place that, you know, there's discrimination happening against marginalized groups. And this book was one of the finalists for the Booker list. And we selected this as our historical fiction pick for January. And those who got it, oh my gosh, this was the consensus from those who read it. It's based on a true story, so you already know what's going to happen. They just still weren't able to cope with what was going to happen. And they said it's because the author wrote the book in a way that he just thought that no matter what, he was going to be absolved and proven innocent, and he was not. But you know that's going to happen at the end. You know that. But again, what pulled them in is because she wrote his character in a way where he just was so convinced that, like, oh, they're going to do right by
me. That just makes your heart clench.
So yeah, The Fortune Men.
I'm laughing because as a reader, that is what I want to know. Like, what do other readers think? What was their reading experience like?
Yes. We send out a lot of debut novelist stuff, which is really cool on top of that. But the goal is to expose our readers to books that they probably would have otherwise not come across on their own or picked up on their own. There are politics in publishing.
Oh, yeah.
Not every book gets the same marketing dollar. So, you know, there are tons of books that come out each week, but you would never know if you don't follow that author. You're not following the latest book recommendation list, which again, typically will be comprised of books that have marketing dollars behind it, because not every book is a Indie Next nomination.
Yeah.
I'm working on behalf of the reader. And because I want to always pick great books for our members, I'm deep diving for these books. I'm looking to see, like, oh, is this a debut? Oh, what would that think? And I smile when I'm selecting books for, like, my members. I'm like, oh, yeah, I think she'll really love this.
Oh, I love that. And can I just add that in my own experience as an author, it was fascinating to see, like, how that side of publishing works. But it was also really disillusioning to discover, like, all those most anticipated, best of, coming soon, can't wait. It's just publicists emailing each other. And marketing dollars pays for publicists. And it takes more than that for books to find their way to the right readers. I mean, it takes the work you're doing. And I love the sound of that. Okay, can I coerce one more crowd-pleasing book recommendation from you?
Oh, gosh, yes. And another one I want to share with you is called A Play for the End of the World. So that fit two genres for us, love and relationships and historical.
Oh, I love that that's a genre for you, love and relationships.
So it's about the relationship between these two men who are Holocaust survivors. They get to New York City, but again, they have this trauma that they're both carrying around. One is older than the other. They've made a way for themselves in New York, et cetera, et cetera. There is a gentleman who lives in India, who is doing a play based on the time period of when these two men were coming up in the during the Holocaust. The one older man wants to be a part of helping the play come to life in their present day. So he travels to India to be with the professor there who is putting this on. The younger guy, Yarik, he meets a woman in New York. She's from the South. She's living there. So he's in this relationship. Yeah, he's also trying to pick up the pieces of what happened to him. And when I tell you, when I found it, I said, oh my gosh, like, I really hope people, they love this, because I love it just by reading a synopsis of it. And when I tell you, they loved it. It was such a treat to have the author on the call, because they had all the questions for him. And he really took his time with this book. A Play for the End of the World. I would recommend that. Like, for those who love the romance too, it will pull at your heartstrings with that. But again, you also have the historical context. Definitely check it out.
Abby, in a real sense, reading is your job.
Yeah.
What are you reading this summer? What are some titles that you know are on your list?
I want to finish The Witcher series. Started watching The Witcher in December. And after that, I said, I need to read the book. And I finished book one and I need to start book two. I have book two with me and I need to start that. So that's my goal, is to finish The Witcher series this summer. I would like to read Will by Will Smith, because I have heard nothing but good things about it. I'm a fan of, Will Smith's work. I'm a fan of Jada Pinkett and Will Smith separately as actors and actresses. I've always enjoyed the films and stuff that they're in. And, you know, I'm really proud of Will Smith, especially coming out of West Philly and me growing up in Southwest Philly. I'm really proud of what he's accomplished. And I want to read Viola Davis's new memoir, too. I really love reading people's stories about their lives and not business. Cause I had somebody ask me that the other day, like, oh, you know, would you have business books to recommend? I really believe that the best stories come out of people who just trying to figure stuff out. And they were using their gifts, their God-given gifts, and they just kept doing what came natural to them. Like that led them to where they ended up. When grit meets the gift, that can do more for you than you spending time trying to figure out like how to go about it the cookie cutter way, the way that was already set by somebody years ago. Because there you realize that there are multiple ways to get to where you need to get to, not to where they got to, but where you need to get to. And because I believe everybody's journey is their own, if you are reading business books because you are trying to rush to get to the end goal, I feel like that you might end up getting to your peak, but you get to it in the wrong season. And then you fall off of the hill sooner than you were supposed to.
I love the way you described that.
You know, people have to appreciate the slowness in your journey too. Appreciate the steadiness, but the slowness of it. Like, I truly believe that slow and steady wins the race. So I'm taking my time, you know, bring it back to when I launched Shelves. When I envisioned Shelves, I envisioned it as a physical bookstore. That was how I envisioned it from jump. It was my friend who told me, girl, you should do a pop-up. I could have turned my nose up at that idea because, again, I had only envisioned it as a physical bookstore. But instead, I said, you know what? That's a good idea. Let me try it. And then I kept doing it and doing it, even though I really didn't feel like I knew what I was doing most of the time. But I kept doing it because I was already sold out to the serving people through a bookstore, even if it had to be as a pop-up. Fast forward to the pandemic starting, all the physical businesses had to close their doors. I remember in that moment, like, God, I don't know how I'm going to make money because I didn't have online at the time. So I said, I don't know how I'm going to make money. But man, you know, I'm also glad that, you know, I'm not over here having to figure out how I'm going to pay my overhead for a commercial space. Well, that June, things took off for us, which also happened to be our anniversary month for us. So our 1 year anniversary month, we had an influx in orders because of the unrest concerning the murder of George Floyd. And I said, I need to now invest in doing online. I got online set up and that came with its own trials and tribulations. Then here it is, online now opened a new door. If I would have turned my nose up to the pop-up, pivoting has been my saving grace. And because of that, my decision to remain open, I literally am living in a prayer, I feel like. Some of the stuff we've been able to accomplish, I've been sitting over here like, wow, and we're still technically only a pop-up in an online bookstore.
Well, Abby, thank you so much for inviting us to join you on your journey vicariously today. And I know that you're not much of a podcast person by your own description. So thank you for pivoting over to What Should I Read Next? It was a joy to hear about your business and the journey you've been on and where you are now. And also thank you for those enticing book recommendations. I know they're going to end up on a lot of readers' to-be-read lists this summer.
Thank you.
Hey readers, I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Abby today, and I'd love to hear what you think she should read next. Visit her online bookstore at shelvesbookstore.com and follow along for news from Shelves and info on those pop-up shops on Instagram. She is at Shelves Bookstore. Check out the full list of titles we talked about today at whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/328. As podcasters, five-star reviews are our love language. When you take a quick minute to give us a five-star review in Apple Podcasts, you fill our bookish hearts with joy, plus spread the book love by helping new readers find the show. Thanks in advance for taking the time. It really does make a difference.
Connect with us and our Instagram community of readers at What Should I Read Next? And follow me at Anne Bogle. That is Anne with an E, B as in books, O-G-E-L. Make sure you're getting our weekly newsletter in your inbox, including our must-have upcoming summer reading guide. Sign up at whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/newsletter. Follow us in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Tune in next week when I'll be talking with a reader from Norway who's looking for books in one of my favorite genres, and I can't wait to give her some ideas. Thanks to the people who make the show happen. What Should I Read Next is produced by Brenna Frederick with sound design by Kellen Pekacek. Readers, that's it for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. And as Rainer Maria Rilke said, ah, how good it is to be among people who are reading. Happy reading, everyone.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when change is constant and we are pulled in far too many directions, we need a way to stay present to life and to increase our ability to remain calm, think clearly, and maintain our well-being. Many studies indicate mindfulness improves our mental, emotional, and physical health. On A Mindful Moment with Teresa McKee, you can learn how to practice mindfulness and enjoy its many benefits. Tune in for guided meditations and to hear tips and advice from some of the most respected experts in the fields of mental health and mindfulness. The world truly can be a better place. It all starts with a mindful moment.